drops. Totally not worth it, in my opinion.
So that thing was a rare, began Seiki as an invitation for them to explain further, deciding to ask one thing at a time. They told him that certain monsters, appearing randomly and at unpredictable times, were harder to kill, and generally gave better loot than common monsters. The Akamanto was one that roamed the alleys of East City. It had a reported sighting rate of about a few times a month, making it one of the more common ones, at least according to a group of people who called themselves the Shinchioka Scientific Society, who published their findings in a newsletter they sent out every month via the Pigeon Post.
Things you can't find in the manual, said Amaya. Only 3 gold every month to subscribe to. You can find them on Trade Street in West City near Daibuji Temple.
Seiki was starting to feel that the more he asked, the more questions he had. Yamura was no longer listening, but was fondling his own scroll, which was identical to the one he had given Seiki.
Let's do this, Yamura finally said.
Holding his breath, Ryoshi untied the strings, then winced in anticipation as he yanked it open to read. Yamura has received Ability Enhancement Scroll, Extra Arrow. Rapid Shots fires up to 4 arrows at a time, up from the usual 3, but costs 10% more energy. Read the scroll aloud in the Ryoshi Shrine to apply the enhancement. Seiki never imagined you could enhance your abilities this way. He looked at Yamura to see what he thought. Yamura was speechless.
No kidding. I don't even have an enhancement slot yet.
He looked up at Seiki.
You know what this would have cost if you were to buy it from the market?
Amaya guessed a few 100 gold, quoting the society again.
I didn't know you could do that, said Seiki.
He was wondering if there would be something that reduced the energy he needed for his moves, since from his experience he seemed to always be running out of energy very early into the fight. According to his 2 companions, it turned out that enhancement scrolls were rather hard to come by, and there were literally hundreds of variations, allowing people to tweak their abilities in one way or another. The first slot unlocked at level 11, then at 13. Even rarer were modification scrolls, which could turn abilities into something else entirely, which, according to Amaya, cost hundreds of gold. The rare ones could be in the thousands. Yamura put his scroll back into his pocket and grinned at Amaya.
See? You always take on a rare.
The girl shrugged.
Or you can take up enchanting and calligraphy and make your own.
Yeah, if you have like millions of gold for the materials, said Yamura.
Plus, you can't really get the rarest ones from crafting anyway.
Amaya shrugged again.
Who's going for rare ones? Anyway, I'm trying to max out both crafting skills, so if you bring the ingredients, I will make low-level scrolls for you for real cheap.
5 gold for an invite wasn't cheap, Yamura pointed out.
5 gold for 2 invites,
Amaya corrected him.
Dirt cheap. Right, Seiki?
She consciously took notice of his name. Seiki laughed. I wouldn't know.
He's new or something, Yamura explained.
But somehow he's damn good at not dying.
You should see these level 20s coming at us. I really thought we were done. One's a samurai with this huge sword, and then you have this obake who's pretty nasty.
Yamura shuddered.
There's something seriously wrong with these people.
Amaya shot him a dark glare, which Yamura did not pick up. Seiki then figured something out.
You're one, aren't you?
He said to the girl.
You're an obake.
He tried out the unfamiliar word. Yamura seemed surprised.
I thought you were a ninja. That vibe, you know.
So an obake is a... Seiki began.
Ghost, explained Yamura. Spirit,
Amaya corrected him. Seiki could finally tell what had been strange about the girl this whole time. A glance at the tatami floor under Amaya confirmed it. She did not cast a shadow.
You don't have a shadow, said Seiki.
Somehow he felt the need to mention it. Amaya smiled.
No. We can also run on water, which is the best perk in the game.
And when you kill them, they're gone in a puff of smoke, Yamura interjected.
And they have the nastiest abilities, like a vengeful ghost or something out to steal your soul.
Spirit,
Amaya corrected him again, angrily.
Hey, chill, said Yamura to the girl. You're cool. I'm just saying that stuff like the obake freeze is pretty horrible, like a vengeful spirit.
If Yamura had been trying to pacify the obake, it was definitely not working.
Do you know what lifesteal is?
Asked Amaya, squinting her eyes. Yamura did not seem to like the direction this was going. He said.
You steal a fifth of the target's health and get a fifth of your health back?
Well,
she said in an unreadable tone.
Check out my lifesteal.
Why? Asked Yamura.
Just do it.
Seki focused his attention, wondering what she was getting at. Life steal. Ability information. Steal up to 20% of the target's health percentage and turn it into an equivalent health percentage for the user. Can only be used on targets with a higher health percentage than the user. Cannot be used on targets more than 2 levels above the user. 2-minute lockout. Life swap. Modified from life steal. Amaya, level 14. Swap health percentages between the target and the user instead of stealing a fixed percentage from the target. Cannot be used when the user is below 25% health. Required energy, 262. Ability modification, yes. Enhancement, backstab. Allows the user to use the ability on group members. Soul steal. Removes the lifesteal restriction that the target be at a higher health percentage than the user, but increases the lockout by 3 minutes. He had assumed it to simply be a strong ability that she could potentially use to intimidate Yamura. He did not expect anything to this level of complication. For a moment, he struggled to make sense of it. Yamura stared at her. Okay, you put a mod and 2 enhance on that. What does it even mean? Amaya giggled. Amaya has removed Yamura from the group. With a cry, Yamura vaporized. Immediately from outside the room, the Ryoshi could be heard yelling, Hey! Amaya leapt to the door and Seki followed her in alarm, not sure what was happening. She opened the door, revealing the confused Yamura, who was not pleased at all and was ready to protest. What did you... Amaya stepped across the room threshold and held out her right hand. A faint stream of dark fog shot out and engulfed Yamura. It caught the Ryoshi unawares and his health drained rapidly. Wait! Cried Seki. However, he was still in the non-PvP territory and he could do nothing to stop her. As Seki was trying to leave the group, Yamura's life had dropped to half, and the Ryoshi tried to strike her hand away, but the girl gripped him hard. Then, just as quickly, Yamura's life was full again, and Amaya was at half health.
That's what it does, said the girl with satisfaction as she casually leapt back into her territory.
Seki stared at her in surprise, trying to process what he had just witnessed. Amaya has invited Yamura to join the group. Yamura was still standing at the doorway, gaping, entirely confused.
Coming or not? Or you can wait for the patrols again.
Amaya smiled as she walked back onto the tatami floor. Yamura stared at her for another whole 5 seconds before giving in. Yamura has joined the group.
What the heck just happened?
Cried the Ryoshi as he walked back into the territory.
And was that life drain really necessary?
The girl shrugged.
Would have taken forever to explain.
It was all meaningful. Give me a minute, said Seki as he carefully thought about it. Apparently she had turned lifesteal into something called life swap, which came with its own advantage and disadvantage, and on that she added 2 more enhancements to tweak it further. Then it hit him. This allows her to give health, Seki cried. That was what she did at the end by swapping her health percentage with Yamura's. The ability was originally an offensive ability, but with this modification, Amaya could actually use her life swap to give health to people with lower life than hers. The backstab modification also made it possible for her to give health to her own group members. But in the demonstration, she had to remove Yamura from her territory first, since it had PvP disabled. Seki was both fascinated and overwhelmed by the evidence of what was possible. Oh. Yamura narrowed his eyes, most likely still disconcerted by the uncalled-for scare. But that's quite a stretch. I'm sure they didn't intend for it to be used that way.
That's the whole point, said Amaya.
So a benevolent spirit then? Seki asked. Nothing benevolent about that, Yamura muttered. Amaya glared at the Ryoshi.
Oh, of course I can use it to kill pesky group members too.
Yamura whispered to Seki.
See? I told you Obake have a cruel streak.
The girl obviously heard him.
You want to see cruel?
She asked in an unreadable tone again. Open your scroll. Yamura said to Seki, deciding to change the subject. Amaya was still frowning, one hand on her hip, as if weighing whether to kick the Ryoshi out of the room again. Let's look at this then, Seki said slowly, sitting down on the floor. He untied the green strings on the scroll and rolled it open. Unlike Yamura's scroll, this one contained only 3 lines of elegant Japanese characters.
A piece of lost poetry?
Amaya turned to him with interest, forgetting her quarrel with Yamura. Seki guessed that must have been what the group notification told them. He read it aloud. O'er the dragon gate, a green sparrow sings her song in the evening gale. Quest accepted. A piece of lost poetry.
Poetry?
Yamura asked dubiously. The quest information also contained nothing but a tease. A piece of lost poetry. Quest information. What does it mean? What does it mean? It also did not escape Seiki's notice that the quest had no level and no reward information.
It's a treasure quest, said Amiya. You figure out the meaning and it leads you to a treasure.
What kind of treasure? Asked Seiki.
Well, could be gold, could be a weapon, could be a crafting ingredient, or just about anything, said Amiya. No one knows how it works. Even the society hasn't got a proper record on it, because these quests are quite rare. Or maybe it's just because most people who get these either don't bother or don't manage to find it.
Seiki looked at the poem again, helplessly. Any idea what it is? Poetry was one of the things he never really paid attention to.
Dragon Gate must be the East Gate, said Amiya, kneeling down beside him to run her finger over the text. Beyond that, I have no idea.
Maybe you go to the East Gate and follow a green sparrow and it will lead you to a treasure? Yamada suggested. It was likely this was his first time coming across something like this. Seiki shrugged. Then he noticed that the text was fading and the scroll was soon blank. When he looked at it again, it had turned into a blank scroll ingredient, which he gave to Amiya as she seemed to want it.
Since the scroll fades, I'm sure it's a personal loot kind of thing, said Amiya. The treasure would only be instanced for you. But of course, people can still kill you after and loot it, so better not let anyone know you're after it.
If I can even find it in the first place, Seiki said. He doubted going bird-watching at the East Gate would turn out to be very fruitful. He did not even think it would be realistic to spot a tiny green sparrow, let alone follow it, if that was what it meant after all. Yamada cursed, looking even more worried than when he saw the patrols.
2 hours. I said 2 hours. I'm going to be in so much trouble. Hey, see you around.
He clapped Seiki on the back.
Shogun next time.
He disappeared in the middle of the last word. Yamada has left the realm. Amiya frowned. Amiya has removed Yamada from the group.
Don't do that when you're still in a group,
she said to the absent Ryoshi, shaking her head.
I forgot once, and suddenly this guy just popped up in my room the next time he logged in. You know, what if I was changing?
Said Seiki. Maybe I should go too. Thanks for saving us.
No, thank you for the gold. Every little helps when you're trying to level crafting. I can do that right now and calligraph an easy enchanted scroll for you. Anything you need?
I don't even know what's possible, Seiki admitted.
Or come back later. Just come outside and yell Amiya. There's one guy who rents this same room who always gets so mad when people do that, but don't mind him.
She giggled. Seiki thought for a moment. Actually, would you mind if I ask a question?
Go ahead.
How do you even fight an Obake? He asked her. He knew how to dodge physical weapons, but with magic, Suguru did not even have to touch him, and Seiki had no idea where to start.
If you're talking about high-level people, just run far away. Life Drain is weaker the further you are. If you run out of sight, it breaks completely and eats up all the required energy.
So you can't really dodge it?
No. Magic doesn't work that way. Just like how a healer can't miss with his heals, you can't dodge magic. You can interrupt the user, though. Right now, you can't do anything about Soul Freeze yet, but if you have a ninja friend, they can Shadow Strike out of it. We're kind of hopeless against ninjas. Every time their poison dart ticks, it breaks our spells. You'll get something later that does break out of it, but I don't remember what it's called. Like a battle shout or something like that?
Oh, said Seiki, not sure he caught all that. I see. He had no idea it was this complicated, especially just about when he thought he was getting the hang of it all. Not only did he have to learn his own moves, he had to know every other move by all other classes as well in order to tell what he was up against. Amiya produced something from her pocket and handed it to him. You have received Simple Paper Crane. Charm, plus 1% luck. Expires in 7 days.
It doesn't do much, admitted the girl. But it helps with quests, especially now that you've got to get yourself 200 gold for your third ability. That's going to take a while.
Apparently she had been checking his abilities as well. Seiki thanked her for the charm, wondering what luck even was. Amiya walked him to the door and sighed as the night breeze blew in and rustled her hanging scrolls on the wall.
Stick around, Seiki, and you'll see there's a lot to be done.
She poked her head out and looked at the deserted alley with a smile. Seiki was not sure what she saw in it.
Take my advice, though, and try to get killed at least once soon,
she added casually. You are no longer in a group with Amiya. She shut the door before Seiki could ask what her last sentence meant, and he was once again alone in the dark, empty alley. From behind the rows of buildings, he could start to see the white lights of dawn creeping up. He'd not realized it had been a whole night. No death yet. Interesting. Seki spun around. His eyes had not adjusted to the darkness outside, and he could not discern anyone. Personally, I don't care about these things, but there's a nut who managed to not die until level 13. So now he's out to kill people just so that they won't break his record. But maybe that's just a myth. Seki thought the voice sounded familiar. He slowly reached for his sword. Oh, please don't, said the voice, chuckling. I don't want to be that guy. There's no need for bloodshed tonight. Seki remembered who it was, just as Gin, level 11, revealed himself from within the shadows, with his bow drawn in the exact same manner as before. The self-proclaimed robber grinned. You sure took your sweet time in there with the lady. But hey, we all have our secrets. I won't ask. It's not, Seki cried, before he understood that the man was just teasing him. What do you want? Where's Uryoshi, friend? Asked Gin. I don't know. Gin nodded toward the door. Is he still in there? Seki could not help wondering whether Amaya would hear him if he shouted right now, or if someone else in the instanced room would come out. He also wondered if he would be fast enough to block an arrow with his bamboo sword. Gin sighed. Why does everyone look so serious when you try to rob them? Out of nowhere, someone materialized behind him with a particular effect that Seki recognized now as ninja's camouflage. He guessed it was Gin's ninja companion, Chika.
Don't turn around, Chika said, or it's instant death with assassin stab.
You're level 9. You don't have it yet, said Seki. Chika grunted. See? Gin jeered. I told you it won't fool anybody. But she does have poison dart, and you probably know what that does. The man was right. Poison dart had a slow effect. With that, there was no hope in blocking arrows or getting out of here alive. Look, I'll put away my bow, said Gin. He lowered his weapon and put it on his back. We can talk like gentlemen. But don't try anything stupid because there's more of us right over there. He nodded to the right, and Seki distinguished another person in the shadows. Hatsuo, level 22, bearded in a loose yukata with a thin red and white headband, who was none other than the same good-natured Hatsuo from Ichikea. Seki stared in surprise. The man shook his head slightly as if telling Seki not to let them know he recognized him. That's one of you? Seki turned to Gin, wondering what exactly was going on. Oh, Hatsuo is one of our founding members, said Gin. He's a good shot. Don't know why we always have a lot of Ryoshi and ninjas. Must be the kind of profession we're in. Anyway, see? Bare hands. I don't even have my secondary equipped either, so let's just talk. All right? Chika backed away as Gin approached him. Seki eyed the man warily, but Gin seemed to have switched his tone now, and he walked closer with his empty hands still raised up. So your friend managed to loot after all, Gin said. That was a good play by him, and I'm not complaining because he did leave us a nice ethereal pearl and an enchanted thread, which is worth a bit of gold. That was very nice of him, so our little ones won't have to go hungry. Robbers got families to feed too, you know. Seki was certain that last part was made up just to fit the man's script. Gin walked closer with a mysterious smile, perhaps a bit too close even. The question is, did he tell you? Did he share? You weren't in a group, so you probably didn't even know he looted. That was something that had never crossed Seki's mind before, and even if he could tell there was something slightly suspicious about how Gin was putting it, he felt an urge to defend Yamura. He did, said Seki. But whatever we did with the loot is none of your business. Gin seemed a bit surprised. Oh, so he did manage to loot. He looked over to Chika. Hey, maybe we should recruit this guy, you think? I really didn't see him do it. The robber laughed as he saw Seki's expression when he figured it had been a trick question. You, on the other hand, will make a good ronin. Straight-edged, you know. I suppose you're not going to tell us what you got. And whatever it was, it's obviously not on you. In the man's hand was a gold coin with several coppers, a health tonic and potion bottles, and an origami crane which the man was looking over with mild interest. They were the contents of Seki's cloth pouch. Hey! Seki cried. Gin laughed and handed them back to him without any attempt to resist. I'm not so heartless as to rob a man of all his belongings. He whistled and a shabby little dappled horse galloped in. But gold is always welcome. The man winked as he jumped onto his mount, juggling a gold coin between his fingers. Seki looked down at the things in his hands and found that the man had indeed failed to return the gold coin with the pile. Gin shouted merrily as he rode away.
If you see your friend, tell him that he's welcome to audition.
Seki turned to look and found that both Chika and Hatsuo had also silently slipped away, leaving him alone in an abandoned narrow alley. The sun was climbing up from the horizon, turning the maze-like East City from a shade of ghastly gray into golden and pale brown. He was not sure if he was upset, annoyed, fascinated, amused, or all of the above. Chapter 10. Gaining the approval of a master swordsman was a feat that required both time and dedication. Seki did not know how Master Tsujihara managed to find fault with all his moves in a manner disturbingly similar to real martial arts masters, who were very seldom pleased with whatever you did. There was never an unkind word from the old man, but he obviously held back on the approval. Even when Seki knew from experience this was all a tried-and-true strategy employed by many teachers, he was determined to get it. He learned a lot about the basics of the sword, and much more about his two abilities, especially the different variations on them depending on the angle of the strike. Starting stances also played a big role, and he soon realized what Master Tsujihara was teaching him was to maximize the effects of his moves, since an ill-formed one only did part of the damage at the same energy cost.
Your sword is a part of your body, Master Tsujihara told him, as he accused Seki of treating it as a foreign object that he was ready to discard when things got hairy. You don't just toss it away and grab your opponent like wrestling.
Seki also became aware during that time that the dojo itself was instanced especially for him. He wondered at first how it worked, since the practice hall directly opened into the courtyard and there was no real boundary between what was public and what was instanced. But then he remarked that when people stepped onto the practice hall floor, they immediately morphed into a replica of themselves that was labeled dojo student, a student who would then quickly walk away into the inner chambers, while their real selves entered their own instances, making for a very smooth transition and giving Seki and the old master the privacy of having the whole practice hall to themselves. The only other people in the dojo were Sato and Meda, the two students he had known from the Umezawa event. There were also other levelless dojo students who occasionally dropped by, who most of the time only gave him random pieces of information about Shinchioka and the world in general.
The Shogun is recruiting people for his campaign against the demonic clan, one of the students told him.
Seki was slightly surprised to find that Shinchioka was actually at war.
But that's for people who are skilled and pass the vigorous military test, the student added, as if to tell him that his level was too low to even be thinking about it.
Seki also spent more time exploring, as he had intended to, and he found out little things hidden everywhere in South City. The lady washing her clothes in the stream would fix torn clothes for a small fee, but explicitly told him that her skills were limited, and sophisticated clothes required a real tailor to fix. There was an ever-ripe persimmon tree that he could eat from that had the same properties as Sumiko's healing tonic, but the fruits could not be stored and would disappear after an hour. At one intersection, a different wanted sign was put up every night, and if Seki wandered around after dark, he would soon run into the wanted person. More often than not, a thief, level 5, who, once defeated, would be taken away by a South City patrol, level unknown, who happened to be riding past and who would give Seki 30 silver coins for his trouble. After being thrown into so many situations he was not ready for, Seki thought it was time to have a plan. At first, he had only been mildly interested, and was just letting the world take him wherever it would. But now that he had a glimpse of what was possible, especially the elusive shared knowledge and language that everyone seemed to have, he could not help but feel intrigued and perhaps a little overwhelmed. The dojo turned out to be something concrete he could work on. He decided he would try to get his third ability as soon as possible. It took him 5 days of diligent practice before Master Tsujihara was finally completely satisfied. Seki had just performed 3 successful consecutive sweeping blades in a row when the progress bar filled. Quest progress. Gain the approval of the Master Swordsman. 100% complete. Quest completed. No pain, no gain. Level 4. 60 XP gained. He turned to look at Master Tsujihara. The master was standing there with his usual slight smile.
Not bad, Seki.
Come on, Master Tsujihara. You can do better than that.
You've still got much to learn, said the master.
Even Ito-sensei actually said he had always had faith in me when I won the junior judo purple belt, said Seki.
A part of him was surprised he could talk about this.
Coddling does not build character, Seiki, said the master. If it's praise you're looking for, I recommend buying a drink on the second floor of Momiji Inn, and the geishas there will tell you what a great hero you are.
He said it as a matter of fact, but Seiki could see the laughter in his eyes.
I didn't expect this kind of advice from you, Master Sugihara, said Seiki, laughing.
Do you need directions? Asked the master, again straight-faced.
Okay, now you're really joking, said Seiki in disbelief. So are you coming with me tonight then, Master Sugihara?
He grinned as he tested the old man.
I'm really disappointed in you, Seiki, said the master.
Seiki laughed.
All right, all right.
He decided to get back to business.
I'm ready. When can you teach me the next ability?
Seiki had heard people whine about how much gold it took, but he could not believe the old master would straight up ask for that, as it did not fit his character at all. Master Sugihara did not answer the question.
Have you thought about working for the Shogun, Seiki? He is recruiting able soldiers.
Do you think I'm one? I mean, an able soldier?
Seiki asked, just to see what he could get the old man to acknowledge. Master Sugihara just gave him a disapproving look.
Fine, I know. Humility is a warrior's virtue, Seiki said, quoting what Master Sugihara had been saying for the past few days.
Master Sugihara was still waiting for an answer, though.
Not really. I haven't thought about it.
Master Sugihara sighed and looked out.
I used to work for the Shogun. It was a specific kind of life, Seiki, with a real purpose. Training soldiers, commanding troops, facing enemies on the battlefield.
The old man's eyes seemed to be looking inward at past memories.
See the Shinshioka's red flags lined up along our ranks as we prepared an attack, fluttering in the wind as the red day dawned on the assault at the enemy base like wings on birds of prey. Which reminds me that I had some rows of towels drying in the yard earlier. They should be done by now. Go get them in here, will you, Seiki?
Seiki blinked at the unexpected twist in the story. The old man did not seem to be joking. Seiki looked out to the courtyard and saw that there was indeed a rack full of white towels, which had not been there before, if he remembered correctly.
Well? Asked the master.
Oh, yeah, sure, said Seiki, a bit confused.
Quest accepted. Towels in the yard. Level 5. He was surprised it was actually a quest, which seemed completely unrelated. He got up, still eyeing the old man, but Master Tsujihara just waved and told him to hurry up. As Seiki went out to load his arm up with cleanly washed towels, he noticed Ipe, level 5, a young man in a loose white yukata sitting cross-legged on the raised platform. His wooden slippers were off on the ground and his bamboo sword propped up vertically on the platform beside him. The man nodded to Seiki when he walked back with all the towels.
Focused strike, said Ipe with a little smile, doing a small move to mimic the ability. Breaks walls.
Seiki was not sure what he meant by that, but the young man said no more and seemed to have already turned his attention to something else beyond the back door across the courtyard. The old master pointed to the corner when he saw Seiki.
Good. Put them over there. Fold them up, too.
Seiki chuckled as he knelt down on the corner and put down the pile of towels, unable to figure out what it was all about.
Is this some kind of punishment, Master Sugihara? I was just joking about the geishas.
Chores build character, Seiki, said the master without turning to look at him.
It did not turn out to be such a chore, after all, as he got the notification as soon as he finished folding the first towel. Quest completed. Towels in the yard. Level 5. 15 XP gained. Before Seiki had time to wonder about the easiest quest he had ever accomplished, the world shattered in an ear-splitting thunderclap. The next thing he knew, he was lying on his side, his ears ringing, his back numb and out of wind as if he had been hit by a sweeping blade. All around him, gray ashes were falling and the smell of smoke filled his lungs. Dazed, he pushed himself up, struggling to comprehend what had just happened. As he looked up, he noticed that the far end of the practice hall was black and red in live flames, producing a thick curtain of black smoke. Glancing to his right, he saw the old master on the floor among a pile of rubble that had collapsed from the ceiling. Seiki rushed to him. Master Sugihara coughed as Seiki helped him to sit up.
Are you all right? Cried Seiki.
The old man's face was covered in ashes. Seiki noticed that a large piece of wood had also pierced through his left forearm, drenching his gray sleeve in blood. At that moment, hurried footsteps arrived and Sato ran in.
Master Sugihara!
Fire, the master managed weakly. Put out the fire first.
One student had already brought in a bucket of water amid confused shouts and yells. More students were shouting as they splashed water to fight the fire. It was a sense of complete chaos.
It was black powder, cried someone.
Another student rushed in great panic.
The inner chambers are all on fire!
Seki had to remind himself it was all a pre-scripted event, but that did not in the very least take away from the urgency of the situation. He could feel the heat from the flames, and the smoke was making it difficult to breathe. His ears were still ringing from the explosion, and whatever he heard seemed distorted and far away. The students were running around in panic, yelling something incomprehensible. One screamed in pain as he rolled on the ground trying to put out the fire that was burning his hakama. The dojo sign had gone up in flames and collapsed onto the floor, blocking off the entrance to the inner chambers. The fire quickly consumed the floor and students ran to throw water on it before it could spread. All of a sudden, Sato cried,
Maida is still inside!
His eyes were wide as he stared at the burning end of the dojo. Master Tsujihara grabbed Seki's arm.
Save him, Seki.
Quest accepted. Save Maida. Level 5. So that's what the towels were for, Seki thought. Grabbing one from the pile and drenching it in a bucket of water, he used it to cover his nose and mouth as he raced into the burning side of the practice hall. It connected to the inner chambers, which he had only been in once. It was worse than he thought. The heat was almost unbearable, and he jumped aside as a burning piece of wood collapsed almost right on him. He had no idea where Maida was in this inferno. He thought he heard Sato's voice from the other side of the flames.
On the right!
Looking ahead, he could almost make out a corridor. The hardwood floor seemed to take longer to catch fire than the bamboo and paper walls. Seki made his way slowly forward the best he could, ducking under the dense smoke as he tried to breathe through the damp cloth. He had neither his bamboo sword nor his shoes, which he had left outside the practice hall as custom required. A piece of flaming wood fell and scalded the back of his leg, and Seki jumped at the burning sensation. Through watering eyes, he could almost distinguish a small opening. What used to be a door must have burnt down, and he made his way through. He found himself in what appeared to be a large room, but it was difficult to determine its boundaries in the sea of fire. Suddenly, he heard clanks coming from somewhere to his left, and he followed the sound. Stepping over what remained of a burnt futon, he found Maida, HP 44 of 120, stretched out on the floor, unconscious. Seki shook him violently. Maida let out a weak groan, but did not move. Seki looked around for an escape route as he put the man's arm around his shoulder. He would have to drag him, though it would be difficult to avoid the fire. Struggling ahead with the unconscious student, Seki managed to bring him to the corridor when a ceiling beam gave way and crashed down on them. Seki braced himself as he threw his body over Maida. Still, the student's health dropped to a fraction of what it had been before. Seki grunted as he pushed the burning beam off him. His own health had taken a large dip, and everything around him was on fire. He pulled Maida from under the pile and could feel the fire scorching his whole right side, eating away at more of his health. The damp cloth was gone in the chaos, and Seki started to cough heavily. He was wondering if he was doing it wrong, as the situation was becoming quite hopeless. He tried to keep as low as he could to the floor and inched forward, tugging Maida along. His head was now spinning as he breathed in more and more smoke. The way down the corridor was blocked with a fallen beam, so he was forced to keep going down the other way. For a moment, he could not quite remember where it led. Maida groaned, and Seki saw that the edge of the man's kimono was on fire. Seki quickly stomped it out, wincing as he felt the scorch through his sock. The smoke burned his throat like acid, stealing away his health, and he almost had no more strength left to drag Maida forward. As Seki tried to pull him with both hands, he stumbled to the floor. It was impossible. In front of him was a dead end. He felt it with his hand and discovered it was thick wood. The sliding door to the right of him was ablaze and threatened to collapse on them. Seki knocked it away, taking the scald on his hand. He could not breathe. The world was starting to become a hot, blurry haze as his health dropped to as low as Maida's. From the back of his mind, he remembered the words from the young man sitting at the entrance. Focus strike breaks walls. What if that was the key out of there? However, after a ray of hope, Seki panicked as he found that, with his health so low, it was near impossible to concentrate his energy. He could see and hear nothing, his consciousness slipping away. Try, his mind screamed as he focused his attention to bring out the move. Try! As if by magic, his vision cleared. You have learned the Samurai Ronin perk, Strength of Will. His bare-handed focused strike smashed the wall, revealing a hole large enough for a child to crawl through. He concentrated his energy again, and the second focused strike broke through it. Seki dragged himself out, his left hand still clutching tightly to Maida's back collar, and they both fell off the raised building onto the ground. The air outside was blessedly cold in comparison. Seki gasped for breath, and he found that he was surrounded by dojo students. One of them splashed water on them, which was more than welcome. He turned back and found Maida still alive, his HP in the single digits. Quest completed. Save Maida. Level 5. 60 XP gained. Seki exhaled a sigh of relief and lay back down on the ground, completely exhausted. After a minute or two, Sato found him and helped him to his feet. It turned out that once the ordeal was over, the students managed to put out the fire. The practice hall had been reduced to a black, bare, half-burnt wooden platform without a roof. The students had come out through the other side of the practice hall, and now that there were no walls left, Seki could see across the platform that the young man who had spoken to him earlier was still sitting casually there, looking out toward the street. Throwing a quick glance at Master Tsujihara, whose injury was being tended to by several students, Seki ran over the platform to the young man. Ipe, level 5, looked up at him with a knowing smile. Trial by fire? Seki just noticed his own clothes were covered with soot, which was only starting to fade away. Yeah. Thanks for earlier. I had to do it 3 times in beta before I figured it out. It was utter hell. I can imagine, said Seki. He looked back at the burnt dojo and could not help feeling a little sorry that it was all destroyed. A thought occurred to him, and he asked Ipe, So you've done it in this one? Not beta, I mean. Seki actually had no idea what beta was like. Ipe nodded. It gets easier if you've done it 3 times already. At least now Maida doesn't die anymore. There used to be a timer, and if he dies, you have to start over. Seki really did not mind. If anything, he was glad that Maida survived, as he never wanted to do anything like this ever again. That brought him to the question he had been going for. So the dojo has been burnt for you all this time? He asked, suspecting now that instances could indeed be in different states. For the past 20 minutes, yeah, said Ipe. To test his theory, Seki watched as Chieko, level 4, in a black kimono came running through the courtyard. As she stepped onto the platform, and therefore into Seki's instance, she turned into a nameless dojo student who then went to help with cleaning up the rubble. It was a little difficult to imagine that in her own personal instance, the dojo still must have been pretty much intact. Another thing still made Seki wonder. How did you know I was about to do the quest? Ipe glanced toward the end of the courtyard. Seki followed his gaze to the empty clothes rack. Oh, Seki said. It was obvious now. Laundry. Then he remembered that something had popped up at the last second of that event. Seki wondered what it was as he focused his attention. Strength of will. Class perk. Gain strength from sheer willpower. Halves the damage on the user from all other sources but direct physical damage for the next 90 seconds. Usable when below 8% health and auto-activates when below 4% health. Perk? Seki had not realized he had said it aloud when Ipe answered. It's not really an ability because it doesn't require energy. Just like the name. A little perk you get from playing the class. Seki remembered now. Right. Like how Ryoshi can see further and Obake can run on water? Ipe nodded. It's funny how most of the time people decide in their class just because of the perk. Not even the playstyle. Just the perk. What does strength of will do exactly? The information stated that it excluded physical damage, so Seki was not quite certain how that would be useful. It doesn't seem to do much, said Ipe. But once you don't have it, then you realize how much you miss it. I thought I would try something new and got a kitsune up to level 9 when I gave up and started over. He made a face. You'll see pretty soon. They will teach you all about it. Again, he nodded towards the courtyard door. Seki turned to look, but the doorway was empty, except for a few nameless citizens in bright clothes walking by. What are you waiting for? A vegetable cart, Ipe said. My ride. If you want to come, you've got exactly... He looked down at his hand, which held a golden object. 6 minutes. Ipe finished his sentence, snapping the watch shut with a resonant metallic clink. European-style pocket watch. Tells the actual time from the realm beyond. Limited edition gift. Cart comes on the hour. Real-world hour, that is, said Ipe as he caught Seki studying the watch.
incentive for the first 200 beta users who signed up for the live version. But it's not that great. You can get a better one from Dungeon Treasure Chests, which actually allows you to set an alarm. But that one takes up one of your charm slots. Ipe nodded toward the dojo. Go talk to the master and pick up the next quest if you're coming. The cart saves you walking all that way to the palace.
Siki decided to take his advice and ran back to Master Tsujihara, whose injured arm was now bandaged and who was giving instructions to the students to move things around.
Meda will live, said the old man, turning toward Seiki as he approached. Thanks to you.
From what Ipe had said, Seiki suspected that Meda would live regardless.
He will need time to recover, though.
Master Tsujihara sighed as he looked at the burnt dojo.
So will this place.
After having practiced in it for so long, Seiki could not help but share the sentiment.
Who did this? Seiki wondered.
Of course it's Umezawa, cried Sato, who happened to be nearby. Who else? He's bent on destroying this dojo.
Better not make accusations without proof, Sato, said Master Tsujihara. Anyway, Seiki, I've got a task for you.
The master handed him a sealed letter.
Take this to Commander Nakatani near the palace. He's my old comrade in arms. I think he should know what happened here.
Quest accepted. To the palace, level 5. To the palace, level 5 quest information. Find Commander Nakatani near the palace in North City and give him the letter from Master Tsujihara. You will receive 35 XP.
Then take this, said the old man,
putting a rectangular piece of copper-colored metal in Seiki's hand. The embossed characters in the front read, Eastern Morishige Army Officer Seal. On the back was an emblem of an ornate flower with 5 petals in a circle. A little hole on top held a red decorative tassel.
Show this to Commander Nakatani if he requires proof of who you are, said the master.
Seiki studied the item in his hand. Official Seal. Quest Item. The holder of the seal is on an official mission and cannot be attacked by other citizens. The truth of the matter was that the first step out of South City was designed to be a safe one, where people could wander through the West and East City and explore what the game had to offer without the risk of being attacked.
So many memories here, said Master Tsujihara as he looked around again.
Seiki was glad to find out that someone had managed to save his shoes and bamboo sword, which were handed back to him as he took his leave from the old master. Ipe was no longer sitting on the porch when Seiki stepped out from the practice hall. Glancing around, Seiki noticed that the man was already standing at the doorway.
Oh, you made it,
said Ipe as Seiki walked up to him.
Just in time.
A 2-donkey cart was coming down the narrow alley. Its wheels were squeaking as it swayed from side to side, the driver trying to keep the 2 unhappy beasts in check and going in the same direction. Haruka, level 3, squealed as she flattened herself against a wall to make way for the cart. Ipe raised his hand to hail it down.
What do you want?
The driver, Tomoko, a middle-aged woman with a straw hat, frowned as she pulled her cart to a stop.
I'm late already for the delivery.
Ipe obviously knew what he was doing. It will be worth your trouble, he said, handing the woman 10 silver and signaling Seiki to do the same. Tomoko eyed them suspiciously for a moment.
Fine, hop on,
she muttered as she put the money in her pocket, still showing no sign of friendliness.
Don't squash my vegetables or you'll have to pay for them, too.
She hates humans, said Ipe, as for an explanation. Before she finished her statement, she had already got the cart moving again. Seiki quickly leapt up onto the back of the cart before it picked up speed and found himself on a pile of pumpkins. Better than persimmons, commented Ipe.
They squish, and you really have to pay.
He leaned back and tried to make himself comfortable as the cart made its bumpy way down the narrow alleys.
So this ride takes you to the palace? Asked Seiki to make sure.
The cart was so rickety that it was rather difficult to believe it would be allowed anywhere respectable. Ipe nodded.
Part of the unofficial public transport system,
he said, but offered no more information, so Seiki did not ask. It turned out that Ipe was not particularly in the mood for conversation, and they spent the ride mostly in silence. Seiki watched as the cart went through the peaceful South City before emerging onto the bustling Trade Street, somewhere in West City, which was ever lively with shops and passers-by. Seiki could see a brawl going on somewhere in one of the alleys, and within moments, elite city patrols rode past them toward the source of the chaos. They continued on Trade Street for a few minutes before Tomoko drew up in front of one store that advertised lunchboxes and came around to pick up 2 pumpkins from the cart.
If you steal my vegetables, I will report you to the authorities,
she warned them before disappearing inside the shop.
She'll be back in about 5 minutes, said Ipe when he noticed that Seiki was unsure if this was their destination. The palace is 2 more stops away.
They had stopped near a busy intersection, and Seiki studied the shops. Next to the pawn shop on the corner was a tailoring shop, as well as various other places selling helmets, charms, and calligraphy. One that had a Kakigori sign in front of it seemed particularly crowded. He could make out the ice character, but was not sure what exactly it was that they sold. Beside it was a shop that advertised handcrafted sword scabbards, in front of which a fortune teller had set up his little stall and was calling out for customers. It all looked vaguely familiar, and he thought he must have come through the area before when he was searching for Ichikeya Inn.
That's the market street, said Ipe, pointing down one busy street that broke off from the main trade street.
Out of the blue, he seemed to have an idea.
Not sure if it's going to work, but follow me, he said as he leapt off the cart.
Seiki followed him through the crowd. Ipe seemed in a hurry, and Seiki quickened his pace to catch up with him. As he went past a large group of people milling about the entrance of the Kakigori shop, he heard a familiar voice.
Seiki?
He turned around and met with Mairin, level 8, whom he remembered as the Kitsune from the Loom Quest before.
Oh, hi, said Seiki. Sorry, I think I'm going somewhere, he added apologetically as he continued to chase after Ipe.
He had only just taken a few more strides than a white fox caught up with him before turning back into Mairin.
Where are you going?
The girl asked. There was something different about her, but he could not tell what.
I'm not sure, Seiki admitted.
Ahead, Ipe turned a corner and ran into a shop that was marked Carpentry. The shop seemed rather bare, but against one wall was a large piece of timber with an advertisement sign that read, Koshima Pinewood, perfect for high-level woodcrafting. When Seiki entered, Ipe had already finished talking to the middle-aged man in a simple brown robe behind the counter.
Tell him about the dojo, Ipe advised Seiki. It works.
Whatever it was, he seemed happy about it.
What's this?
Asked Mairin with interest as she followed him in.
Quest shortcut, said Ipe. Who are you?
Your neighborhood Kitsune.
Ipe shrugged at the answer. Mairin had turned into a fox and was dashing around as she explored the shop. Seiki looked at the middle-aged man behind the counter, whose name was Minami. For some reason, the man reminded him of Hatsuo from Ichikeya, or whatever his clan was, after all.
What can I do for you, young man? Asked the merchant.
Seiki glanced at Ipe.
The dojo burnt down, said Ipe.
Behind him, the white fox had leapt onto the expensive piece of lumber.
Burnt down, repeated Seiki, turning back to Minami.
Oh my, cried the man in alarm. There's been a fire? Where?
For some reason, Seiki had a feeling he had just said the same thing to Ipe earlier.
South City, he said.
Then he realized he remembered the name of the dojo.
Nansei Dojo.
Is Master Tsujihara all right?
The man asked as he reached over to grab hold of Seiki's arm.
He's an old friend of mine. Are you one of his students, then?
Yes. And Master Tsujihara is all right, said Seiki, trying as politely as he could to pry the man's grip off his arm, slightly surprised that Master Tsujihara was so well-connected socially.
I will have to visit him, cried Minami. Thank you so much for letting me know.
He looked around as he muttered something to himself about the dry weather and fire hazard. Then, all traces of worry erased from his face, he twisted his neck back to Seiki and said,
Master Tsujihara's student, what can I do for you?
Okay, said Ipe, satisfied. We're done here. Now let's get back on that cart.
He turned to leave, and the white fox jumped down from the piece of timber and leapt over the shop threshold. Seiki followed them, utterly confused.
What was that all about?
Hope we're not too late for the cart, said Ipe, looking ahead as he zigzagged through the people. He then tried to explain.
After we get to the palace, we do that escort quest, then it's back to the dojo, and they will send us to find someone to help fix the dojo, which will lead us to this Minami. Now, when you come back later, you can just give him 200 gold and you can move on.
Seiki was not sure that was the best explanation he had ever heard. It also did not help that Ipe was running at full speed through a thick crowd and Seiki could barely catch his words. Seiki looked at Mairin, who shook her head to say that she could not help him.
It's your class quest, so I don't know anything about it.
They made it back to the shop where they had gotten off, but Tomoko's cart had already disappeared. Ipe did not seem worried. He took them through a shortcut and caught up with it at the next intersection. He got on, again paying 10 silver. Seiki did the same. As for Mairin, she activated her fox form and hopped on. Tomoko noticed her and actually smiled.
Don't you have to pay? Seiki asked.
The white fox just scratched her ear and yawned.
Kitsune perk, Ipe said. In fox form, you can do a lot of foxy things, like slip through guards and hitch a ride for free or go through small cracks. You can also literally smell danger.
That was fun for a while, but it's not for me.
Seiki took a peek at the fox, who had curled up into a ball, and wondered if she could talk when in fox form. Thinking back, he recalled that when they did the loon quest, he had never heard the fox talk. Looking at her fine white fur, he felt an irresistible urge to pet it, but he was afraid she would be offended. Suddenly, the fox sat up and stared at something to the left of the cart. Seiki followed her gaze but could see nothing. As the cart drew past, Maiden was still staring straight at the same spot, and Seiki tried squinting. The cart was too bumpy for him to really focus, but he thought he saw something slightly unnatural about the area, as if the air was somehow thicker.
Camouflage? Seiki wondered out loud.
Both Ipe and Maiden turned to look at him. Seiki kept his eyes on the spot, and as the cart turned a corner, he thought the air shimmered and revealed the shape of Hebe of the Shadow Manor, level 19, who Seiki could have sworn was staring intently at him. The cart made the corner, blocking her from sight.
It's probably nothing, said Seiki when he noted his two travel companions were still looking at him. It was too brief of a glimpse, and he could not be certain he was not imagining things.
The street they had turned onto was paved with flat slabs of stones, making for a noticeably smoother ride. Seiki peered around and saw that it was wider and had fewer pedestrians. On one side was a high, white stone wall that ran the whole length of the street. The other side was a row of three-storied buildings that were completely uniform.
Welcome to North City. City combat rules apply. PvP status enabled.
Seiki was starting to notice the distinct characters of the different districts of Shinchioka. South City was peaceful and charming. West City was lively and civilized. North City seemed formal to the point of being austere, and East City was simply lawless. After a while, Seiki observed they were going around the wall toward an opening. A large gray gate, heavily guarded by palace patrols, level 30, elite, who eyed them warily as they passed.
Welcome to the Palace District. Palace combat rules apply. PvP status enabled.
North City seemed to be built on the side of a hill with the palace at the very top. A palace consisting of a group of several buildings whose black-tiled roofs Seiki could make out as soon as they went through the gate. The main road led straight up to the palace, and on the sides there were signs pointing to Tenkaku Shrine and Kyoritsu Temple. It was as Seiki had expected. Tomoko's cart was probably too shabby to be allowed on the main road for long. She soon turned her cart down a nearby lane and ended up going through a back door and zigzagging down what was marked the servants' quarters. She pulled to a stop at one black door, after which both Ipe and Maiden leapt off. The Kitsune quickly turned back into human form, earning an immediate frown from Tomoko. They were in a small, treed courtyard. Beyond the wall, grand buildings loomed high, and now that they were so near, Seiki was surprised at the scale of it. It was a big advantage having a guide, who had presumably done it twice already. From that courtyard in the servants' quarters, Ipe skillfully led them through several turns and many more courtyards and gardens toward their destination. As Seiki gaped at the tidy walls and the trees around the palace district, he could not help but feel a bit of regret that he did not get to explore the place for the first time on his own.
You're doing that escort quest, right?
Asked Maiden, as they passed through a narrow garden lined with cherry blossoms.
Nakatani led her first, said Ipe. Actually, the escort quest is optional for you. But you're doing it, right? I skipped it at the time, so I thought I would do it now.
So that's why she has come along, Seiki thought to himself. The garden was connected to a large gravel courtyard, where a few guards in red and black uniforms were training. In front of them, shouting orders, was a man in heavy armor, with a mustache and a hardy face who turned out to be Commander Nakatani, level unknown. Ipe went up to him and thrust the letter unceremoniously into his hand.
Here you go again, Commander, he said.
Who is this insolent youth?
The commander frowned, but did not seem to mind that much as he read the letter.
Oh, you'll need to see this, too, said Ipe, flashing him his metal seal, which the commander took a look at and nodded.
Ipe nodded to Seiki to do the same. Seiki was starting to think that Ipe was trying to get everything over with as fast as possible. Since Seiki was not quite as disrespectful in his manners, the commander actually asked him his name. He told him that he was a great friend of Master Tsujihara's, and that in the letter, the master had recommended him to get some experience and gain honor with the shogun with real combat.
I bet you can tell him to get to the point and he wouldn't mind,
Seiki heard Ippei say from behind him as the commander went on about how honorable it was to work for the shogun. Maiden was giggling.
I heard someone pulled something with the shogun the other day, claiming to be his lost son and tried to run up to hug him.
Ippei chuckled.
What happened? Jail time. 1 hour.
Seiki realized the commander was still talking. Sorry, he said, turning his attention back to the man.
Could you say that again?
The ambassador from Fuoka is leaving the city today. I'm sure there are a few spots left in the rear guard of the procession where your skills could be of use. What do you say, Seiki?
Wait, cried Ippei.
Ippei invites you to join a group. You are now in a group with Ippei, level 5.
Okay, now accept it, Ippei said.
Seiki looked at Maiden, unsure how group quests worked.
Oh, I accepted the quest a long time ago,
said the kitsune.
Just never started it.
Seiki accepted the quest, which turned out not to be called escort, but rear guards, level 5, with a promise of 125 XP. The commander told him to go to the gate in front and wait for the procession, which should be coming out within 10 minutes.
Talk to Lieutenant Kato to confirm your participation.
Commander Nakatani then added,
We don't normally just accept anyone, but I trust any student of Master Tsujihara's.
Invite?
Said Maiden as they left the commander and his troops behind and made their way toward the designated gate. Seiki tried to, but he could not, since Ippei was the one who had initiated the group. Ippei looked at her in surprise.
You're doing this with us? You bet.
But you're already level 8. You're just gonna up-level all the monsters.
Hey, why else would I come all the way here?
Said Maiden.
Don't worry, I won't let you die. Plus, it's more XP for you, too.
Ippei seemed a bit concerned.
Not so sure about kitsune heals, to be honest, he said. No offense. I had a kitsune. Couldn't seem to do anything to keep people alive. That's because you were probably doing it wrong,
Maiden giggled.
Probably,
Ippei agreed, not seeming to mind.
Well, Seiki here took on the loom lady basically in his starting clothes and with only one ability and we didn't die. He can tank, right?
Maiden turned to Seiki expectantly. Seiki had heard the term before but was not sure what it meant. Apparently Ippei did, but was still not convinced.
Won't it be easier to do your own instance? As a kitsune, they give you your own NPC tank and healer.
Maiden breathed out noisily.
What's the fun in that? NPC tanks are terrible. That's why I skipped it the first time.
She turned to Seiki.
Seiki? Tell him. You can tank, right?
Yeah, sure, said Seiki. Then he thought he should make sure he understood what he just agreed to do.
Tank?
Maiden winked at him.
Just do what you normally do.
Ippei shrugged and decided to take the path of least resistance. Ippei has invited Maiden to join the group. Maiden seemed excited.
Here they come.
The gate opened, and beyond it was an expansive stone-paved courtyard that was most likely the inner part of the palace. On the ground, the deliberate openings in the stone pavement seemed to have been especially made for the large pine trees, at least 3 stories high, which were planted in an organized line that led from the main gate on the left toward a wide staircase of a large hall. Lieutenant Kato, level unknown, in uniform, was overseeing the opening of the gate, and Maiden ran up to him and told him that they would like to start the escort quest now. Despite the non-standard term, the lieutenant apparently understood her and nodded. He told them to fall in with the rear guards at the end of the procession. Rear guards, level 5, quest progress, stage 1. Follow the rear guards and see the ambassador off the palace district safely. The procession was drawing nearer. There were pairs of mounted guards walking in front, carrying blue and red flags. Beyond that, in the middle of the procession, was a horse-drawn cart with an ornate red roof with red curtains, which must be where the ambassador was hiding.
Nothing happens for now, said Ippei. You walk with them until stage 2, then things go crazy. Don't step on the shadows. If you have to choose, step on traps, but not shadows. Shadows?
Asked Maiden. All of a sudden, she gasped and collapsed. On the ground was a dead white fox. Maiden, level 8. HP 0 of 232. Lootable. Seiki stared. Behind her, the air wavered, and Hebe of the Shadow Manor, level 19, in all black, materialized, looking a bit surprised.
Well, turns out you can kill this one,
she said, looking at the bloody dagger in her hand.
Chapter 11.
In shock and sparing no thought to the level difference, Seiki grabbed his bamboo sword.
Why?
He cried. You are on an official mission and cannot harm other citizens.